That is a huge thing. It's the third digital wave is what they're calling it. It's a really important wave. You've got every retailer knowing that it's really important to have these networks and be able to push out deals. And it is going to be very seasonal in a way. Publishers have the challenge of creating the right network, the right environment for them to be into, for them to want to advertise the retail network within their publications or within their radio stations or TV stations, or what have you, digitally or podcasts or what have you. It's really about delivering quality, having the right environment, and just a lot of trial and error.
Welcome to the Pubway Podcast. Each episode will showcase a conversation with a leader from the publishing world. If you're working at a publisher, a DSP or SSP, or you're just curious about the media industry and want to sit down and pick the brains of the experts from within the publishing space, then this is the show for you.
Hello, and welcome to the Pubway Podcast. My name is Tina Iannacchino.
And I'm Mike Villalobos. And in today's episode, we have the absolute pleasure of actually discussing what it's like taking a 100-year-plus company through innovation, adaptation, and really evolving to find the needs and solutions for media buyers and planners in the digital space.
And as Mike already said, it's our absolute pleasure to introduce Heather Patacchio, the CEO of AdWanted. Heather, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much. I'm thrilled to be here.
Amazing. And I'm also super excited because you're our first lady guest here at the Pubway.
Ah, that's great.
I know, the chosen one. Heavy yeah. Weighs the crown. We will see.
I'll take the crown. That'll be great.
We all will, girl. So before we kind of dive into all things innovation, I would love to give our audience a bit more background on who you are and the company you're with today.
Sure. So as you guys introduced me, my name is Heather Patacchio. I am the CEO of AdWanted USA. So our flagship product that everyone on this podcast may know is SRDS. So that is the 100 plus year old company. In fact, it's 104 years old. And what we do is we provide media plan, just a little old, you know, we provide media planning data to media buyers and planners. So advertising agencies typically come to our platform to find out and discover what media to work with when they're recommending advertising campaigns to their clients. We work with all media, and we do have to innovate and stay on top of what's happening in the media landscape at all times. So back in 2020, we were purchased actually right at the start of COVID by AdWanted. In previous years, we were owned by Kantar and Nielsen and VNU. So we've gone through many ownership changes, and under AdWanted, we've been given really the opportunity to innovate and grow. We have many products that we're bringing. So we're not just data anymore. We're actually bringing over some software solutions with a campaign management tool called AdOne that works with advertising agencies. And then something that I will probably bring up in some questions that may come up called Allocator, which is a tool for publishers, specifically on broadcast end right now, but it will evolve to all media. So that is who we are and what we do. I've been with the company actually. So just to give a little background on myself, I've been with the company since 2010. I took a 3-year hiatus actually when around 2017, I think it was. And I became a leadership training coach for C-suite level people. And I worked with assessments. So it was quite enlightening and eye-opening, but gave me the visibility into how to approach leadership. So it helps me with my role today.
That's super cool. And I love hearing about kind of the publisher plug, being that we are the Pubway.
Yes.
No pun intended. And I'm sorry, what was the name of the tool again that was publisher-centric?
So Allocator is going to be the publisher-centric tool, yes. And SRDS is actually very publisher-centric because we display all publisher data within our database, which is excellent.
Awesome. So I think that would really be a nice segue into talking more about, especially I feel like AI is a very super buzzword for us all the past 24 months or so. You can't go to any event or panel without hearing it at least 87 times. But I would love to kind of hear your perspective on how AI can really help support publishers to effectively monetize and kind of move forward their inventory. I'm not sure if Allocator is already doing AI or has plans to, but any insight you can give there.
So the beauty of Allocator is it is all AI. It is machine learning and it is AI based. So it has some synthetic data generation capabilities within there, but then we also have the ability to add in 25 different criteria for the advertisers to use to surface inventory that may not necessarily be the best inventory or the most popular inventory. So it really gives the opportunity to show all the different inventory that is available for specific campaigns that are being offered. The uniqueness of the tool is that while it displays all that inventory, it sounds, and people say, well, you know, what about the media sales person, right? That's involved, the actual human being. Mm-hmm. What it does is it creates efficiencies for them so that they're not spending time trying to chase down all this inventory to display it to the client. So it's to the agencies. So it's going to be, or the client brand direct. So it's going to actually help them create efficiencies to do their job more efficiently, but then also to be doing other tasks besides the chasing down of the inventory and surfacing it and showing it to the client or agency.
I love that. And actually, I think it's worth just calling out that synthetic data is effectively manufactured data that's going into an assumption or probabilistic route versus having deterministic data coming directly from users or a source, et cetera, or yep. even a panel base.
Right.
But it's in that same vein, transparency is always the question, especially in advertising. As we all know, there are some bad actors in the space.
Oh, yes.
How do you foresee transparency playing into the industry, especially with this AI boom? I think with anything that's going to be innovative, there's always a risk or challenge of a black box approach. Mm-hmm. And what are you hiding behind the AI or ML model, as some people will do? And then sometimes you'll have someone in a foreign country just, you know, plugging away and doing things manually and calling it what it is, right?
Yeah, I call it the fear factor, because it's honestly something where people are and should be a little bit leery of AI with the synthetic data, as well as just even the content that can be churned out when it comes to AI. So I think there's an importance of not ever taking out the human element and making sure that you are QCing and you are double checking before you actually put something out there, because you always have to take that step. I have a prime example of AI gone wrong. I got an email the other day, and I kind of found it a little humorous, because they said, "Congratulations on your CTO role." And I was like, what? I'm like, I never knew I had that skill set. I'm now the chief technology officer of AdWanted. I'm like, that's crazy. And then they were pitching me something, which could have been quite interesting, because it was something I'm looking for actually currently for the business. But because they had the data about me so wrong and they were trying to tailor it to me, they didn't put the human element into it to fact check. So they got it wrong and I deleted the email. So I think really just remembering that you always have to have somebody looking at it, even if you have synthetic data that's going to be pushed out, the AI piece, the machine learning piece, you're entering criteria, you still have to have that human element. So from a publisher standpoint, that media salesperson is still going to be integral to the process, because you don't want to push out bad data. You don't want to have something look really bad to the client, because they'll never come back then.
Absolutely. And I think that's a great example of what the utes these days call the ick. You just immediately immediately know.
Yeah, you really do. It's like, yes, a great word. I love it.
Yeah.
I love it. So I guess on the quality checking part of it, how does that evolve into automation, into like the RFP process? I believe you guys do something similar, right? So I mean, you probably know way more about this than I do. I mean, you definitely do, rather. Would love to understand how quality check works into your day-to-day, because it seems like you guys have a ton of automation already in place. Would I love to understand where you've seen the human element play the biggest factor to maintain integrity within your business.
Yeah. So for SRDS specifically, we actually just began using AI to scrape for media kits, because we want to make sure we have the most up-to-date media kits and everything within our platform, because SRDS actually stands for Standard Rate and Data Service. So the data that we put in is typically rates, circulation, contacts, and we want to make sure that they're true and they're right. That scraping technology has given us the ability to then read the media kits that we're picking up and drop them into tabled fields that we have on the back end. The QC that has to happen is we have to make sure that they're lining up. We have to make sure that the data actually that it's reading and pulling out is correct. So in our day-to-day, we're using the human element has to stay there. It has to be there. We have a series, we actually have 10 people that do a lot of the quality control to make sure that what goes in is right and true. Because if you just rely on solely the AI or the machine learning, you're not going to get accuracy.
Totally. And I think that's a great example of how, especially in this kind of dynamic ad tech landscape and being a company with over 100 years of history, that you've really found a way to kind of balance the legacy with the constant need for innovation. I would love to know if you have any other kind of examples that would align well with that as well.
Yeah, absolutely. So being a legacy company, you know, we work with a lot of print publishers because that's where we got, that's our bones. That's where we started.
Totally.
However, we do know, and we have to keep our eye on all media. So we have influencer data now, we have connected screens, we have podcasts within there, we have gaming, we're working on consumer surveys that we're going to be pushing out specifically towards podcasts, connected screens and gaming. And we're always looking to innovate and make sure that whatever is coming up in the industry, we're keeping our eye on. So if there is a new piece of data or media that's coming out, we know that we have to keep our finger on the pulse there to make sure that we have all of that comprehensive data within our system and that we are working with all the media. We also work with a lot of partners to aggregate some additional data and put some of that information into our systems, which really does help boost and beef up the data from all angles.
Awesome. Yeah. And I think that definitely brings to another interesting point. And CTAG is similar, not to plug ourselves as well, but with the AI piece, the ethical AI conversation and really being in control of your data set and the different biases that you're ingesting and kind of weighing all these factors against is super important. And I think, as we mentioned before, there are some dark horses out there who are getting their AI. They're saying it's theirs, but it's from elsewhere. And they really have no control over where that origin is coming from. And that's where you can really get into some murky waters as a publisher, especially if you're using a system to rely revenue and exposure on.
Yeah, I completely agree with that. You know, AI is a blessing because there are so many ways that you can utilize it, but it can also be quite hurtful if it's not used in the right way. So it's just extremely important to make sure you've got those right measures in place. You're creating the right environment to use AI, and you're also putting out quality with AI.
Speaking of a little bit of a tangent, but speaking of murky waters, and I think playing well in the sandbox and respecting, I would say, avoiding biases. How do you see the political cycle coming up affecting AI and the evolution of just remaining respectful of? Going kind of down the down a different tangent, but in the same vein of like murky waters, how do you see AI playing its role in the upcoming political cycle, and how to avoid biases that I think inherently are going to take place, just given some of the models that have been built and people are rightfully scared of, to be honest? How do you see that playing out into media planning, media buying, all that good stuff?
So from an advertising creative, I think, standpoint is where it scares me a lot. Like, and I, you know, it's actually because the biases are going to be built in, and you're not going to know what you're seeing. Is it real? Is it not? You know, what are they saying? Is it real? Is it not? Are they pulling it from somewhere that's creating and agitating the marketplace and getting people to believe in something that may not necessarily be true? So there's going to be a lot of different, I think, things that arise from that. From a media buying and planning standpoint, you know, it's. I think a lot of the media buying and planning is already set and ready to go. It's just, I think that creative angle of it is going to be the challenge of where AI is really going to become the impact. But also, you know, going into those battleground states and looking at maybe putting the wrong messaging in battleground states and making people believe for the wrong things. I mean, so you don't know if what you're seeing or getting served is going to be real. And that's where I think AI might go wrong with the political landscape.
Yeah, I think it also presents an interesting opportunity for AI, especially as it relates to cloaking. You know, people do many things to get around the blocks that all of us have in place, and the open exchange still remains another murky water, especially in a very highly sensitive election year. And unfortunately turns into a bit like whack-a-mole here in the States every 2 to 4 years.
Oh, yeah.
We can all be as prepared as we think we are, and then something completely new is just a curveball.
Yeah, I agree 100%. Yeah, for sure.
With I think with the election cycle, I think hyperlocal is always going to be a very big fixation for anything that's going to be building up to the primaries.
Sure.
What are your thoughts on hyperlocal targeting? How can publishers capitalize on that? What are the opportunities, but also challenges that you're seeing?
So hyperlocal is actually something that comes up on a daily basis here, especially with the data that we provide and serve back. Not just from political, you know, it's great for the political advertising and being able to target that way. But really, we're finding agencies are being tasked with going deeper and deeper into like finding the right blocks, even like the household to go into, not just, down to the zip code level, but even going deeper than that. So it's really about making sure that you are utilizing the best data sources to make the plans right for your clients. So I think, you know, from an agency perspective, it's going to be a challenge for them because they have to make sure that they're utilizing the right data sources to drill down into that hyperlocal. But for us, and we do display so much hyperlocal information within SRDS. So we literally have all of the small publications as well as the largest publications listed out, and broadcast stations, TV, cable stations, everything listed out within the SRDS database at the hyperlocal level. And it's just so important for these media buyers and planners to be able to get to that information. It is a challenge. They may be sitting in New York City and not necessarily understand what's going on in Boise, Idaho, and they're being tasked with creating a media plan in that specific area. So it's really about the importance of making sure, and from the publisher angle, making sure that they are providing that hyperlocal data so that the agencies can be informed to create, and they make the plan then, put them on the plan.
Totally.
Yeah,
totally. And I think too, you touched on a great point with kind of just the evolving RFP process in general for publishers and beyond just monetization itself with hyperlocal in mind. You mentioned just kind of the nuances of not physically being there, but I guess what other major challenges do you foresee? And I'm also thinking of the print publishers you mentioned working with, because those do happen to be the more hyperlocal publishers that are dealing with these nuances.
Yeah, they are. And the RFP process has really become a challenge for everybody. They're, you know, you're working with the agencies, and the agencies have, you know, young media planners that have millions of dollars at their fingertips, and they're trying to turn these plans around fast, and they are trying to turn these RFPs around fast. So they're not necessarily putting them together well informed. So the RFPs have to be really well developed to provide the information that these guys are looking for. One of the challenges I know is actually getting in front of that media buyer and planner, because they don't pick up the phone, they don't answer the email. So they're just sitting there with a piece of paper, drilling down with their data sources, like literally filling out the RFP. And if it's not exactly if they don't get back exactly what they need, you might not make the plan. So the challenge for the actual publisher themselves is utilizing their sales teams. If they don't make the plan, it never hurts to go back to the agency, to say, hey, why didn't I make this? What didn't I provide to you? Is there something missing? I have X, Y, and Z. It wasn't a field to fill out. So there are ways to go back, and it never hurts to go back, because typically there are some residual dollars to be grabbed.
Totally. And I know the hands-on keyboard people as ex-hands-on keyboard people ourselves, and probably still transparently too much sometimes when there's fire drills. I think we always all appreciate clear communication and transparency, like any good partnership should have. The ethos of it is, if something's not working, let's find a successful way forward.
And build those relationships too. I think that's the other thing. Make sure that your media sales teams are building the relationships. It doesn't hurt.
Yeah.
Really, truly, they tend to go back to those that they have a good relationship with. So just staying in communication, keeping on top of them. They may not answer the email, send them an email. Send them an email anyway. They might read it.
Going back to the human element we were speaking about before.
Absolutely. Utilize LinkedIn. Utilize social media. Like get your name out there. Like push out. Be present. Yeah. I think it's so important.
Completely. And I think also it'd be interesting, saying that we've already touched upon AI and a few other buzzwords of the year. What year is it even now? 2024. I would also kind of love to hear your perspective on another rising trend, and that is retail media. networks and how you kind of see space evolving and how you're specifically looking for an exciting opportunity to play within. I'm not sure if you're already in it today.
Yeah, so we're keeping our eye on retail media networks. That is a huge thing. It's the third digital wave is what they're calling it. So it's a really important wave. I mean, it's like, you know, you've got every retailer knowing that it's really important to have these networks and be able to push out deals. And it is going to be very seasonal in a way. With the retail networks, the publishers have the challenge of creating the right network, the right environment for them to be into, for them to want to advertise the retail network within their publications or within their radio stations or TV stations or what have you, digitally or, you know, podcasts or what have you. So I really think it's really about delivering quality, delivering, you know, having the right environment and just a lot of trial and error.
Yeah, totally. And keeping your eye on it is a good way of putting it. I would love to also ask you, while you keep an eye on things, what other kind of emerging trends or technologies do you see shaping the future of advertising right now? Not a difficult question. Things. I love how you put it that way. I'd also like to hear about kind of the emerging trends or technologies that you might see shaping the future of the advertising industry's kind of innovation. And obviously, that's not a tough question at all to answer. So no pressure at all.
Yeah.
What are the waves to ride?
What waves to ride? I mean, really, the retail media networks, for sure. We're also keeping an eye on gaming. That's a tricky one. We don't display data yet in SRDS for gaming, but we have our eye on it, and we're doing the consumer surveys on that. There's so much in-product advertising in gaming, but it is kind of very specific. So it's like, you know, are the brands going to embrace it? So that's why, like, we're really keeping our eye on that piece too. As far as technology goes, I mean, AI, you know, we've been talking about it the whole time. So AI, really machine learning. And I think we're going to see a lot of the synthetic data generators coming out as well. And I use them cautiously, but I think that they can be very beneficial if used right.
I agree with that. I think synthetic data also is going to play a really big part in the privacy compliance space.
Yes, absolutely.
Mainly because you can no longer use user data, right? So it'd be really interesting to get your perspective on, you know, around data privacy and concerns, how companies how publishers can help other companies evolve with their strategies and how synthetic data can play into that as well. What are your thoughts on what that wave looks like in the next probably 12 to 24 months?
We have our cookie-less world, right, that we're going to be coming into, which it's quite interesting.
We're plugging ourselves again.
Yeah. And it's, you know, GDPR, CCPA, all of the data privacy issues that are coming out about, you know, for publishers, I think it's really about capturing and providing first-party data, making sure that when they're capturing the data, because, you know, they can get it from producing the right content and then maybe some call to actions, but really creating the environment where people want to engage and give their information, I think is an important thing. And using synthetic data to do that, that's a tricky one. I'm not 100% sure how to really offer my opinion on that one.
No worries at all. Well, winding down timers, that we're getting close to the mark here, but would love to actually hear something a little bit on a personal note. What's the most exciting thing you've read recently? What's on your bookshelf? I know Tina's a voracious reader.
I'm a voracious reader. I read way too much. So I kind of read multiple books at the same time. I just finished a calling. Yeah. So I just finished Colleen Hoover, one of her books, Lisa Jewell. But what's on my bookshelf that I read recently that I loved a lot, there are two. So one is called Rework, and the author is Jason Fried, and I forget the other guy, David Hansen. It's a dual author. Rework is about basically abandoning all notions of what you know about your business and just rebuilding, reworking, re-strategizing, redoing, and not being afraid of it. So I really I enjoyed that book. Not necessarily I'm going to throw caution to the wind and just be like, okay, let's rework everything. But that's kind of what the premise of the book was. And it was really just an inspiring book to read. So I really liked that one. The other one I have is Hardiness by Dr. Steven Stein. So I said about my leadership training, the company I worked for, he owned and he wrote the book. He's a psychiatrist. And it's all about hardiness and how you deal with certain stressful situations, but then also the resilience factor plays into that. So how you handle stressful situations and then how resilient you are with bouncing back from a stressful situation. And there's not a good or bad way to manage it or handle it. It doesn't matter if you're not wonderful on the resilience scale. Everybody handles it in different ways. And it's really about the psychiatry behind the hardiness. And like, it really gives you insight into yourself, because there's some quizzes and stuff in there that you can take and really show you how you would handle certain situations and how you would bounce back from certain things, and how to work to improve on some of those situations. So it's a pretty cool book.
That sounds really, really amazing. I think especially as a leader, clearly your leadership itch, you're still finding ways to scratch with books like that. And then I also, my eyes lit up when you said Lisa Jewell. Was it None of This Is True?
Yes. I just read that one. I love it. Great book.
Same. So I joined a book club, and that was the book. And one of the ladies that are in the club, she messaged the author and sent everything that was actually true. I can send it to you.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. That would be awesome. That is so cool. Thank you.
I'll connect with you after. But okay, yeah, cool. I'm a little disappointed by what's actually true, but like, it's fine.
Okay. Oh my gosh. I can't wait to see it, because I love that book. It was great. Yeah. Yeah. She's a fantastic author, actually. I just queued up. I just got a Kindle, which I'm like infatuated with. And I just like loaded up a whole bunch of her books. So.
Amazing. Yeah, I'm not on the Kindle train yet. I'm so old school.
Like, I love a book, but I commute, so I hate carrying a book with my laptop and everything. So I'm like, let me break down, because I do love an old school book. I just love the feel of it. So at home, I'll read the book. Yeah. When I commute, I'm on the Kindle.
There, definitely a balance there. I know. I know. I understand the pros. I'm sure I'll succumb to it.
Yeah, eventually. I don't know. It took me a long time. Like literally, like I was almost forced into it.
Amazing. Well, cool. Well, I think this is a good place to end right here. But Heather, thank you so much again for joining us today. It's been really lovely chatting with you and getting to know you a bit more.
I had a blast. Thank you so much. This was great.
Likewise. Bye.